you take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty, and welcome to the Radical Russ Show. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, coming to you live and direct from Roma J Studios in my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. Now, if you're new to the program, yes, the opening theme is about marijuana, but the show, I assure you, is not. This was my theme from my marijuana podcasting days, and I figured, well, this is how people know me. I do love the herb, and these days we could all use a little something to get us through the day, so smoke them if you got them. I want to let you know about my new call-in message line, which you can reach at 877-RUSS-420. That's also 877-877-420. What a great number. You can call in and leave me your thoughts, your comments, kudos, and complaints, and I might even play them on the show. And soon that number will be a live call-in number where you can interact with me during the show. I told you my background's in talk radio, and I'm going to make this a place where you can be heard as well. Now, coming up on the show today for February the 21st, 2025, we'll start off with a look at the seven deadly topics: sex, drugs, rock and roll, politics, religion, sports, and science, including a look at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees for 2025. We've got a message from our new sponsor. Yay, we've got a sponsor, Fuke Pharmaceuticals. We'll have a special message for us on the show. And then we're going to take a deep look into the primary reason to boycott Idaho. A lot of you know that I'm a red state refugee. I'm originally from the Boise, Idaho area. I escaped in the 21st century, and people ask me a lot, you know, why did you leave Idaho? And my response is always, have you seen the news? Have you checked out what's going on there? So we'll talk a little bit about the state of Idaho and why we should boycott that state and its potatoes. Also on the show, we're going to get into the radical rant at the end and talk about who was the real winner of the 2024 election. And it's not who you might think it was. But before we get to all that, we're going to have my opening thoughts on the Democratic Party's need to wake up and smell the coffee, read the room, fight for our damn democracy. It's getting scary out there. And the response we've seen from Democrats has seemed to have been, you know, business as usual. So we'll talk about that. That's all coming up on the Radical Russ Show today. So let's start off with our main topic, the need for the Democratic Party to wake up. It's amazing to me that they are completely unprepared for what's going on with Donald Trump. I mean, he was in office for an entire term, 4 years. You saw what he did then, right? You knew what he was up to then. He fomented an insurrection, violence at the Capitol to try to steal power. He promulgated the big lie for 4 years. He got behind this Project 2025. They wrote a 900-page playbook. How much more advance notice do you people need? This is 8 years running. We've known this guy is the next Hitler. And what are we getting from the Democrats? Oh, well, they have some press conferences. You know, they'll announce a press conference or something that happened 2 or 3 days ago, you know, and then, oh, well, let's get together and say something about it. And when they do have the press conferences, they won't actually call out what's going on. They won't call a Nazi a Nazi. They won't say, you know, they'll always give cover to Republicans. They always get this, oh, the good Republicans, it's just the MAGA Republicans. No, it's the entire damn party is corrupt from head to toe. And yes, I'm happy that the Democrats, I know people tell me, they say, oh, you know, Russ, they're in the minority. There's not a whole lot that Democrats can do. But somehow when the Republicans are in the minority, they find a way to roadblock and gum up the agenda of Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Bill Clinton, as far back as I can remember. Somehow they're much better at being the minority opposition than the Democratic Party is. Now, it is good that they stood fast against the worst of the worst Trump nominees. You know, they stood fast against Hegseth, for example, the drunk Fox News host who's now firing generals and renaming our army bases back to the Confederate traitors they used to be named after. You heard about that one? Oh, and what an excuse he gave, too. Oh, no, we're not naming it Fort Bragg for the Confederate General Bragg. We're naming it for some soldier in World War II who also happened to be named Bragg. Oh, my God. It's so transparent that what they're fighting for is a return to Christian white supremacy. They want America to be the white Christian homeland, and Democrats can't say that. Democrats, for some reason, can't come out and say that we're headed toward The Handmaid's Tale and 1984 all wrapped up in one. But they stood against the worst nominees, but they voted for some of them. They voted for Pam Bondi and the Kristi Noem, the puppy killer. Marco Rubio got all the Democratic votes. And now he's currently tearing apart USAID and helping to implement the Trump agenda to see as many poor and brown people starve as fast as possible. So the average person out there, not us, not you and me, we follow politics, we follow this stuff, we're in the weeds here. The average person with the job and the kids and the mortgage that's not paying attention to politics, when they do look up, it looks like business as usual. Oh, another president has come in and he's nominated some folks and now we're going to have hearings on those folks. Let's just see how that turns out. Well, look, the guy is a convicted felon and 34 times, impeached twice, led an insurrection. The fact that you would accept a nomination from him is disqualifying. The fact that you would pledge your loyalty to that administration is disqualifying right on its face. The lack of the Democrats to understand, and of course, you know, being their leadership is all in the 80s, in their 80s, 70s and 80s, or Hakeem Jeffries, who's just, he might as well be 80. Like, he is the oldest young man I've ever heard in politics. But we've got the House, they decided to form a rapid response team to deal with the latest things coming out of the Trump administration. They just did this last week. Like, why was this rapid response team not in play November 6th of last year, right? Or January 20th of this year? Like I said, you got 8 years to prep for this guy. It's almost as if they thought there was no possible way he could win. Oh, you know, we raised $1 billion. We've got the perfect candidate. She's running the perfect campaign. There's just no way she could lose. That's what it feels. It feels like, once again, Democrats are up on their high horse, up in their ivory tower, not recognizing what's happening on the ground. And I don't know what's going on with my camera feed there. I apologize for that. For those of you listening in the podcast, I'll continue and not let that bother me. And this rapid response team was formed with an 80-year-old and a 70-year-old and a 60-year-old leading it. Like they got Connolly, I guess it was Jerry Connolly, was part of the lead. Again, completely unprepared for the moment we live in, the world that exists with social media and rapid response, the attention economy, whatever you want to call it. They're just not ready for it. And they need to take heed of Sister Mary Elephant.
Class! Class!
Yeah, let's get them to wake up. Let's get these Democrats to wake up. Let me go back in time a little bit. Let's go back to 2022. President Joe Biden gave this speech where he was framed in red and had, you know, Marines standing behind him. And it was the heart of democracy speech where Biden laid out how terrible the Trumps would be and how we're fighting for democracy. Let me just give you a little taste of that.
Too much of what's happening in our country today is not normal. Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic.
Threatens the very foundations of our republic. Five alarm fire, right? This is the worst possible thing that could happen if Donald Trump got into power again. This is Joe Biden saying this in 2022. But notice how there's an out. Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans, not Donald Trump and the Republicans. Joe Biden is from that old collegial era of, you know, the friends across the aisle, Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan having a beer after Congress, whatever the hell. That world doesn't exist anymore. These Republicans want us dead, locked up, put away. They have one of their favorite T-shirts. Liberalism is a mental disease. They think we're diseased. They want to round us up and control us. all of them. But Joe Biden gives them the out, the MAGA Republicans. Let me give you another taste of this.
Too much of what's happening in our country today is not normal. I want to be very clear up front. Not every Republican, not even the majority of Republicans are MAGA Republicans. Not every Republican embraces their extreme ideology. I know, because I've been able to work with these mainstream Republicans.
So, again, the out. Trying to make it that, oh, it's just the MAGA Republicans that are a problem. There's still some good Republicans. Won't the good Republicans please save us? We just need three of you to please come along and save us. Look, they are tied to Donald Trump. If you haven't figured that out yet, you're never going to figure it out. You know, historians, when they look back at the Nazi era and the people who were Nazis, they had a special term for the people who went along with the Nazi party, not because they wanted to throw Jews in ovens and conquer Poland and the rest of Europe, but, you know, the price of eggs was too high, or the inflation was too much, or whatever excuse they had. They have a special term for those Nazis. That term is Nazis. It doesn't matter what knot you use to tie yourself to that wagon. You're tied to that wagon. And there's no more room for this benefit of the doubt that there's any good Republicans out there. The fact that you're letting this happen, that you're going along in lockstep, 100% of the votes almost every time, except for the occasional Mitch McConnell or Lisa Murkowski. And again, McConnell's only voting now against these things because he's retiring. Profiles encourage. But the Democrats always want to give an out to the maybe we can find some bipartisanship. Maybe we can find some good Republicans to work with. Ted Lieu, the congressman from California, I believe, did this just the other day, too. He had a tweet out, a post, a blue sky, a skeet, whatever, that was out there listing, had a list of things, of the things that had happened. You know, fired the air traffic controllers and the people that take care of the FDA and the disease response, et cetera, and he says, accident, I think not, they're incompetent. Again, back to this thing of, oh, it's just another president. It's just business as usual. It's just this one's not very good at it. No, there is nothing inefficient, incompetent, or accidental about what is happening now. They are Nazis seeking to establish a white Christian homeland in the United States, a de facto corporate theocracy in the United States. They are moving right now to pass the SAVE Act, an act that would make it so your name in your voter registration has to match your name on your birth certificate. Well, guess what? Whole bunch of women that get married change their names from their birth certificate. Whole bunch of transgender people who go through transition change their name on their voting registration, but don't get it done on their birth certificate. And now what? You've got 70%, 80% of women out there won't be able to vote if this thing passed. This is five alarm fire time. Okay, and from what we're seeing from Democrats, let me give you another example, right? After Joe Biden goes through all of this, it's existential threat, it's a threat to democracy, threat to our way of life. There he is in the Oval Office, welcoming Trump in. Oh, hello, existential threat to our democracy. Come right down then. Nice to see you. Let's follow the rules and decorum of the transfer of power, because now we're just going to transfer power to the fascist Nazi dictatorship. Let me shake your hand. And they wonder why they can't get more people to vote for him. This picture, to the average Joe out there, again, who doesn't follow politics like we do, gets the message, oh, he's not really a fascist dictator. He's not really going to destroy America. There he is shaking hands with him. It's just more politics as usual. Once again, people calling names and making threats, and everything's fine. We got similar reactions from Kamala Harris.
And it is clear from John Kelly's words that Donald Trump is someone who, I quote, certainly falls into the general definition of fascist, who in fact vowed to be a dictator on day one and vowed to use the military as his personal militia to carry out his personal and political vendettas.
He's going to use the military as his militia to carry out his own personal vendettas. He is a fascist, according to one of our top generals. That sounds really bad. That sounds like something we should fight with every ounce of our time and our energy, all our might. We should all be gathering together to fight this. And make no mistake, she doubled down on this, you know, because she was saying that General Kelly says he's a fascist. And this was followed up in CNN town hall where, you know, Anderson Cooper wanted to make sure that's what she really meant.
Do you think Donald Trump is a fascist?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And I also believe that the people who know him best on this subject should be trusted.
So here she is, directly calling Donald Trump a fascist, somebody who's going to destroy our way of life, destroy our democracy. And I can't remember how many times I heard the chants at the rallies, when we fight, we win. When we fight, we win. When we fight, we win. Oh, I lost? Oh, okay, no more fighting then. Where the hell is Kamala Harris? I've seen a few shots of her. She was at a basketball game somewhere. And another one I saw, she was taking pictures with some firefighters for something. And I've gotten response from this. I've been going around on this on social media. Kamala Harris doesn't owe you anything. She tried her best. And if the people would have chosen her, we wouldn't be in this. What do you mean I don't? She doesn't. That's exactly what politicians owe. If there's anybody who owes the public something, it's politicians. It's people like me who are living on the barest of budgets who scraped up $100 to send to her. It's the people like me who were out there telling our friends and neighbors, listen to her. She says he's a fascist. He's going to end the USA. And then when it's happening, as it's happening, here we are out front with no backup. No backup. This is the time in American history where someone could step up and lead. And what it seems to me, and don't get me wrong, I voted for Kamala Harris. I raised money for Kamala Harris. I protested for her. I think she'd have been a great president. She'd have been a fantastic administrator of the federal government. But it does seem to me like she just was looking for a job, just looking for a promotion. Because if she really believes all that stuff she was saying about fascism, the end of democracy, I think we'd see a little more of her, maybe leading people. And what can she do, right? She's not in office, right? Okay, well, I'm seeing rumblings about an economic blackout on February 28th, calling on the people to not buy anything on February 28th. I'm seeing another one, a call for a general strike, and I might be wrong on the date. Maybe it's March 15th or something. Imagine if the last person who was running for the presidency, who was our last chance to defeat Donald Trump, came out and said, I call on everyone to support this February 28th economic blackout. We need to show the power of the people. I support everyone on this general. But no. They can't say that. Can't do that. The donors would be angry. The donors would be upset if we started telling people to not work. You can't shut down capitalism. That's what it's giving. That's what we're hearing out here. That's the feel we're all getting. Hello, kitty. The feel we're all getting from our elected officials right now. How about we take a look at somebody that actually is in power, the protege of Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi, Hakeem Jeffries, the minority leader in the House, who, if we had won the House, would be the Speaker of the House. And I don't know how in the hell we managed to find someone who's black and in their 50s, who has the same exact problem as the white woman in her 80s. Hakeem Jeffries comes from this same donor-based, blue state, backroom dealing as Nancy Pelosi does. So we got the leader of the House. What, you know, come out and tell us, right? Tell us that we're facing fascism. Tell us that we're facing the end of democracy. Tell us that we all got to band together and fight. No, what has he got to say for us?
Captain Chaos and extreme MAGA Republicans spent last year promising to lower the high cost of living and running away from Project 2025 as if it didn't exist.
Captain Chaos. Isn't that Butter's alter ego in South Park? Or maybe it's Professor Chaos. Whatever. Captain Chaos. Oh, boy, you really nailed it there. Let's not call him a Nazi. Let's not call him a fascist. Let's not call him a threat to democracy. Captain Chaos. That'll motivate us. That'll get us going. And once again, arguing to the competence. Well, he said he'd make our eggs cheaper. He's not going to happen. Sure is incompetent. like the problem is the eggs are too expensive. When their planes are falling out of the sky and they're laying off FDA people. As if the problem is that the eggs are too expensive when they're laying off the infectious disease researchers as we have a bird flu epidemic, an RSV epidemic, we still have COVID out there. It's like lots of stuff out there that can get us. The bit-by-bit dismantling of our federal government and the motivating talk from the leader in the House is, oh, he said he'd make eggs cheaper. He sure is incompetent. Now, another example of this, and I want to talk just a little detour, is this whole deal with Mayor Adams in New York City. You've followed this. Mayor Adams is a Democrat, nominally, but he's gone total MAGA in the sense that he made an explicit quid pro quo deal because he's facing some investigations, he's facing some charges. And the Trump White House said, well, hey, you know, if you let us put ICE at Rikers Island and you let us go round up the immigrants and you don't try to stop this sanctuary city stuff, if you stop this sanctuary city stuff, well, then we won't prosecute you. Like, openly saying this, like openly saying the quid pro quo. They were even on a Fox show, one of the round table panel shows, where the prosecutor and Adams are sitting next to each other. And the guy says, well, it'll go away as long as he comes through for us. Like, the corruption is so out in the open, which is really Trump's superpower, is doing all the criming so blatantly and so out in the open that nobody can actually believe it. This can't be a crime. Nobody would do this openly. They'd be trying to cover it up. So anyway, with this Mayor Adams story, we've got this explicit quid pro quo that he's going to work for Trump to the harm of New Yorkers. And then it comes out that the governor of New York, Governor Kathy Hochul, has the power to remove Mayor Adams. Has the power to remove him. And this went around the internet for a while. Well, why doesn't she kick him out? Every day she's not kicking him out. She's showing how weak the Democrats are. And she had a couple statements hemming and hawing. Oh, we'll gather some people to talk about it. And we'll figure out. I'm really upset about him. Boom, boom. And then the explainer came from MSNBC, from Lawrence O'Donnell. Lawrence O'Donnell had to explain to us that we were wrong to think that Kathy Hochul could just outright terminate the mayor. Because it would actually require a hearing. Yes, there would have to be a hearing, and this hearing has never been attempted before. Nobody's ever tried to do this hearing before, and she would have to attend it as the prosecutor and the judge, and he could bring lawyers. He could bring lawyers to the hearing and appeal everything. And there's no limit to how long he could appeal things, so it could be appealed forever. Oh, no. Darn it. We might have to have day after day of story after story of the mayor of New York and the governor of New York, a Democrat, prosecuting a Democrat for being corrupt and working with the MAGA fascists. Boy, we wouldn't want that, would we, Lawrence? Whoa, no, we wouldn't want that night after night on the news about how corrupt this guy is. No, no. And as far as Kathy Hochul, oh, well, she'd have to be there every day. It would take away. Don't we have a lieutenant governor in New York? Isn't that what lieutenant governors are for? So that's the background on this Hochul thing. I bring this around to talk about Hakeem Jeffries because he was asked about the whole Adams situation. This was his response to CNN.
Adams has a responsibility to decisively demonstrate to the people of New York City that he has the capacity to continue to govern in the best interest of New Yorkers, as opposed to taking orders from the Trump administration.
Oh boy, this guy who's admitted to an explicit quid pro quo and wants to work with the fascist dictatorship, we better trust him to do the right thing. We better call on him to do the right thing. Oh, won't you just do the right thing, you guys? Worthless, worthless Washington General's ass party that we got here. Democrats keep steadfastly pointing to the rule book, saying, oh, dogs can't play basketball, as Air Bud is repeatedly posterizing them with dunks. But I'll tell you what, folks, the people have had enough of this. And I think this is going to be an interesting turn in that in 2016, Donald Trump destroyed the Republican Party from within, completely remade it in his image. in 2024, Donald Trump's going to destroy the Democratic Party from outside, from we the people the Democrats are supposed to be fighting for, have had enough of not being fought for. There's a whole bunch of little examples. Primary in my mind is Nancy Pelosi's stock trades. Like, the most obvious thing of corruption is you can't trade stocks when you're a lawmaker who makes laws that can make those stocks go up or down. But no, Pelosi wouldn't let that happen. It would affect her portfolio, wouldn't it? It's little things like that that make us feel like, oh, you're more interested in the cocktail circuit. You're more interested in the donors. You're more interested in the money than the people. When I was growing up, there was two parties. There was the Republican Party. That was the rich people's party. And then there was the Democratic Party. That was the poor people's party. The Republicans were the daddy and the Democrats were the mommy. The Republicans were the stern ones who meted out the punishment and the rules. And the Democrats were the ones that were the caring, compassionate ones who helped the needy. But no more. No, what we've got here since about Bill Clinton is the Republicans being the party of the rich Nazis and theocrats, and the Democrats being the party of the rich lawyers and tech bros. And there is no party for the poor anymore. When's the last time you heard any politician, much less a Democrat, but should be a Democrat, mention the poor? Oh, you hear a lot about the middle class. Oh, we got to rebuild the middle class. Got to help the middle class. Every now and then you might get the working class. Nobody wants to talk about the poor anymore, despite the fact that there's a whole lot of us poor people out here and a whole lot of votes you could be getting from us. And we'll talk about that at the end of the show. But let's get back to this. Reading the room. Hakeem Jeffries has a book to sell. Oh, yeah. Hakeem's on a book tour. You remember how, like, Maggie Haberman and Bob Woodward and John Bolton and so many of these other guys had critical, crucial, real-time, damning information about Trump, but didn't release it. They saved it for months later to put in their book for an exclusive to make some money. So here's Hakeem Jeffries out on a book tour. Like, that's what we want from you? Well, the people in Chicago outside of the book tour had a few things to say about that.
We don't need a book tour!
We don't need a book tour!
Why do we need Hakeem to do?
Stand up, fight back!
And it's just great. People on the street with signs calling for general strike, calling on Democrats to fight. This is perfect. This is exactly what we need. Democrats just need to start being as scared of their base as Republicans are of their base. Donald Trump has managed to make the MAGA base this whipped up, frothing animal of fear that the Republicans have to face, worried that they'll get bombed or shot or primaried. Now, I'm not calling for us to have Democrats worry about being bombed or shot. That's ridiculous. But they should definitely fear being primaried. And in fact, at this point, I would contribute to any super PAC that pledged itself that it would only fund Democrats under the age of 60 to primary any Democrat over the age of 60. And I know, oh, Russ, don't be ageist. Look, this is just a matter of worldview. These people, these boomers and still silent generation who are running the Democratic Party just don't get it. They don't know that they can't read the room. It's not that they, I just think they can't. They're just like fundamentally incapable of changing. So we got to change them. And finally, you've probably seen this video, heard a little bit about it, but I definitely wanted to include it in my show because here's former NFL punter Chris Cluey. He's at the Huntington Beach City Council because they've got this ordinance up that they want to put a plaque up for the library. You know, we love our library, whatever. But in the plaque is Make America Great Again, a bunch of MAGA stuff. So Chris Cluey showed up to speak out about that.
Hi, my name's Chris Cluey, a 15-year HB resident. I'm here to speak out against both the plaque and the current city council. As the community made clear at the Library Commission meeting last Tuesday, everyone is in favor of a plaque to celebrate the library, but the vast, vast majority are against including a MAGA acrostic. Okay? Unfortunately, it's clear that this council does not listen, so instead I'm going to take my time to say what MAGA has stood for these past 3 weeks. MAGA stands for trying to erase trans people from existence. MAGA stands for resegregation and racism. MAGA stands for censorship and book bans. MAGA stands for firing air traffic controllers while planes are crashing. MAGA stands for firing the people overseeing our nuclear arsenal. MAGA stands for firing military veterans and those serving them at the VA, including canceling research on veteran suicide. MAGA stands for cutting funds to education, including for disabled children. MAGA is profoundly corrupt, unmistakably anti-democracy, and most importantly, MAGA is explicitly a Nazi movement. You may have replaced a swastika with a red hat, but that is what it is. I will now engage in the time-honored American tradition of peaceful civil disobedience.
Now, for those of you on the podcast, at this point, he leaves the lectern and goes up to the counselors. Yeah. Two or three cops initially get him, and another third, fourth, fifth cop run up onto the stage to place him on his stomach, handcuff his hands behind his back. Takes five of them, you know.
Yeah, we're going to take a five-minute reset.
The counselors all leaving the room because, oh no, the punter is sitting in front of them in handcuffs. And here the cops are dragging him out, three of them just dragging him out of the place. And his reaction afterward, I think, puts it perfectly. He posted, quote, "It's been a long fucking day. I'm tired, and I misspoke. Let me rephrase it in a more correct way. Fuck Hakeem Jeffries and almost every other elected Democratic official for forcing me to be the one to get arrested instead of them doing their goddamn job and being leaders." Exactly. And stay tuned. At the end of the show, I'll have my radical rant where I explore the presidential electoral numbers and show what happens when Democrats don't forcefully fight and express their sincere beliefs. Well, as you know, I'm a cosmopolitan man of varied and eclectic interests, but actually it's just seven. Seven things I'm interested in. Sex, drugs, rock and roll, politics, religion, sports, and science. So let's put 60 seconds on the board for each of them in this rapid-fire segment I call the Seven Deadly Topics. Sex. In a hearing concerning the administration's attempt to categorically ban transgender people serving in the military, Judge Anna Reyes pressed the government's attorney on whether such a ban displayed animus, or irrational hostility, toward transgender people. Judge Reyes asked whether the ban that calls an entire category of people dishonest, dishonorable, undisciplined, and immodest was the government showing animus towards transgender people. Judge Reyes noted that the transgender service members are people who have received medals for taking fire for this country. When the attorney said he couldn't answer, Judge Reyes said, "You do have an answer, you just don't want to give it." She then suddenly changed the rules of her courtroom, ruling that attorneys who graduated from the University of Virginia Law School could not argue before her because they are all liars and lack integrity and are undisciplined. After she sat the government's attorney down, a University of Virginia law graduate, she called him back up and asked whether that was a display of animus. Drugs. The president of Colombia says cocaine is no worse than whiskey, and that if you want peace, you have to dismantle the business of drug trafficking. Colombian President Gustavo Petro said that scientists have studied this, and cocaine is illegal because it is made in Latin America, not because it is worse than whiskey. Well, I fully agree with this because if there's two things I learned in drug reform, it's one, no drug is so harmful that prohibition doesn't make it worse. And two, few drugs are as devastating to self and society as alcohol. Now, I know some of you will be wary of the idea of a hard drug being legal, but again, by any scientific metric, alcohol is a hard drug. Yes, there will be some people who abuse it, get addicted to it, and harm others because of it. But you don't hear anything about booze cartels shooting up cities anymore, do you? And reach for comment at Mar-a-Lago, presidential son Donald Trump Jr. said, "Ah, rock and roll." The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame announced their 2005 nominees, and they include the Black Crowes, Chubby Checker, Mariah Carey, Joe Cocker, Billy Idol, Joy Division and New Order, because they changed their names, right? Cyndi Lauper, Mana, Oasis, Outkast, Fish, Soundgarden, and the White Stripes. But it does seem strange to me that there are musical halls of fame for jazz, blues, gospel, hip-hop, rhythm and blues, and polka that rock artists can't get into. But all those artists could get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Now, okay, maybe not polka. Still, I'm going to make my annual pitch that Styx should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They are a band that has been together since 1972, who sold more studio albums than The Who, who had more triple platinum albums than Fleetwood Mac, had more number one albums than Genesis, and had more top 10 singles than ZZ Top. They invented the power ballad with Lady, and they're recognized in South Park and Pittsburgh Steelers games. Put Styx in the hall. Politics. Human thumb Tom Holman, the acting director of ICE, has lashed out at New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, calling AOC the dumbest congresswoman ever elected to Congress. Holman complains that AOC has been impeding ICE in their mission to inflict as much harm against immigrants as swiftly as possible. Holman claims he has asked the Justice Department to investigate AOC for the crime of explaining that the Fourth and Fifth Amendments to the U.S. Constitution still exist, and they apply to all human beings, even the brown ones. Holman, a holder of criminal justice associate and bachelor's degrees from Jefferson Community College and SUNY Polytechnic, was referring to an online seminar AOC's office put on called Know Your Rights in Case of ICE. AOC, a dual major international relations and economics honors graduate of Boston University, posted, "This is why you fight these cowards. The moment you stand up to them, they crumble. Holman has nothing. The Fourth Amendment is clear, and I'm well within my duties to educate people of their rights." Religion. Yet another way theocracy attempts to claw its way into our secular democracy is through efforts to groom young people into Christianity in our public schools. A while back, the Supreme Court ruled that a football coach in Washington State was well within his rights to gather his players after a football game on the school's 50-yard line to engage in some Christian prayer. Now churchy wants in the doors of our public schools by having school chaplains. Some 15 red states have filed versions of bills to allow schools to hire religious chaplains to minister students. Want to guess which religion cash-strapped school districts with majority Protestant populations are going to hire? Proponents say it's about addressing youth mental health issues and violence in school. So let's have Christian ministers who are not trained in mental health care, but don't do fuck all about the guns? We can't find money for counselors or art teachers or new textbooks, but here's Reverend Dimmesdale with some scripture to mellow you out after the latest active shooter drill. Don't worry, folks. Giving religious men access to kids has never turned out badly. Sports. It's been a phenomenon of late for Canadian crowds to boo the singing of the United States national anthem. Canadians are not sorry about it in response to Trump continuing to claim Canada as the 51st U.S. state and calling their prime minister governor. I tuned into the first Four Nations game between the United States and Canada. With the game being played in Montreal, the PA announcer asked the crowd to respect the anthems, but the boos rained down nonetheless. Then the game was on for about 9 seconds. There wasn't even a second ticked off before there was one fight, and then after reset, another fight broke out before the puck was even dropped. There was a shot at the Canadian goal, and then a third fight broke out. Before last night's final between USA and Canada, Trump posted, "I'll be calling our great American hockey team to spur them on towards victory tonight against Canada, which will someday be our cherished 51st state." Canada beat the U.S. 3-2. Can you imagine how it's going to be in 2028 when the Summer Olympics are in Los Angeles? It's wild that our history repeating itself also includes the Summer Olympics and the fascist dictatorship right before the World War. Science. The world's glaciers are melting faster than ever recorded. Since 2000, glacial ice has decreased by 5%. Between 2000 and 2023, glaciers lost around 270 billion tons of ice a year on average. That's like losing 30 years' worth of fresh water for every human on Earth in 1 year, every year, since the year 2000. Hardest hit are the glaciers in Europe, which have lost 39% of their ice. In a normal climate, glacial meltwater flows to hundreds of millions of people every summer, acting as a reservoir against drought. In the winter, snowpack replenishes the glacier. But in this century, more water melts off than can be replaced. Melting glaciers mean a rise in sea levels. Since 1900, the sea level has risen 20 centimeters, or a bit less than 8 inches. Half that rise in sea level has occurred since the 1990s. For every additional centimeter of sea level rise, 2 million people are exposed to flood risk. And in case the orange idiot is listening, rising sea levels mean less coastline. All right, that's all the time for the 7 Deadly Topics. And I want to remind you, you can contact the Radical Russ Show. My email is radicalruss@gmail.com. You can find me on Blue Sky at radicalruss.com. And my website is radicalruss.com. You can also find my online store at radruss.com. Or you can give me a call at our new message line, 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. I'm also Radical Russ on everything else out there. But if it's owned by a billionaire, I'm not checking it. And now, a message from our sponsor. The Radical Rush Show is brought to you by Fuke Pharmaceuticals, creating lifelong customers since 1905. Now, from the makers of Hippocrasol and Fuckitol, ask your prescriber about Republican Empathy. It happened to me, you lib. 100-gram suppositories. Republican Empathy allows you to be able to put yourself in someone else's shoes and imagine how terrible Republican policies would affect them, helping to reduce or even eliminate those terrible policies. Republican Empathy works by making those Republican policies directly affect somebody you love. Republican Empathy helped Nancy Reagan support stem cell research that would help Alzheimer's patients like her husband Ronnie. Republican Empathy helped Dick Cheney support his daughter's gay marriage, helped Jeb Bush support immigration reform for his Mexican wife, and helped John McCain oppose torture. Don't take Republican Empathy if you are allergic to making amends. Side effects can include changing your mind and agreeing with Democrats. Ask your doctor about Republican Empathy. It happened to me, you lib, today. All right. Okay, so thank you so much, Fuke Pharmaceuticals. Also, real quick, before we get to our next segment, I did have somebody hit me up via socials the other day and asked me about my fingernails. Like, what's up with your fingernails, dude? So if you're not watching the video, I've painted my fingernails black, except for my ring finger, which is painted pink at the moment. And I'm doing it for a very important reason, and that is because of this white old face. So I'm surrounded out here in Southern Oregon by a whole bunch of Gen X white guys who look a lot like me. Bald, white goatee. And I wanted to make sure that I'm out there in public walking around, people don't mistake me for one of them. And I wanted people who were immigrant or trans or gay or in any way like that to know that I was standing with them. And there's those suggestions out there with the, like the blue bands or something like that. You know, I was like, that seemed kind of lame. Doesn't seem like you're putting much, you know, skin in the game. But when you're a 57-year-old man walking around in Southern Oregon with pink painted fingernail, black fingernail, that gets you noticed. I've actually had a lot of good compliments on it, but it definitely lets them know I'm not one of them and lets good people know that I got their back. Everything's good. All right, let's move on. All right, it's time for a blue state boycott of the state of Idaho, particularly their potatoes. Idaho, like many of the red states, is instituting terrible policies that harm women, LGBTQ people, the disabled, immigrants, and religious, ethnic, and racial minorities. But no red state is more directly associated with one product than Idaho and the potato. They even brag about it on their license plates. And boycotting Idaho harms communities of color less because there's so few of them living there. It's time for the economically superior blue states to put the hurt on the regressive red states. Here's another reason to boycott Idaho, the handmaid state. The primary reason to boycott Idaho is their hideous abortion laws. And there are other states out there with many of the same laws. Texas, for example, South Carolina. I know there's a lot of those red states, but like I said, you boycott Idaho, you're going to harm the fewest minorities. So let me tell you about Idaho's abortion laws. Women are basically enslaved to their pregnancy in the state of Idaho. You get pregnant, you cannot abort your baby. Idaho's been waiting to ban abortion since 2020 when it passed a trigger ban, which basically said, hey, as soon as Roe v. Wade falls, we're banning abortion. And of course, Roe v. Wade fell in 2022, and they've banned abortion since. All abortions in the state of Idaho are illegal. We're not talking just 6 week period where even women at 6 weeks don't know they're pregnant. The moment of conception, abortions are illegal. But there are some exceptions. If the mother's on death's door, or if she's the victim of rape or incest. And then only in the first trimester. And then only if it's reported to the police. So you're a woman who got raped. You got pregnant. You have to report that to the police in order to go get your abortion. And again, make sure you do that within the first 3 months. But Idaho also has a law that no other state has. Idaho has an abortion trafficking felony. And what this means, abortion trafficking means it's illegal to help a pregnant teen girl leave Idaho for abortion health care out of state without her parents' permission. So if you're an Uber driver and you pick up some girl in Fruitland, Idaho, and you drive her across the border to Ontario, Oregon, and she gets an abortion, you've committed a felony and can do some serious time. It also makes driving the teen to the post office to pick up abortion pills a felony. So maybe you're that Uber driver and you're thinking, I'm not going to take anyone over the border. No way. Oh, this girl just wants a ride to the post office? Oh, okay. Nope. If she picked up some mifepristone, you've committed a felony. Now, if that wasn't bad enough, the combination of those two laws that we just mentioned make Idaho a rapist incestual daddy's paradise. So let me fill you in. Idaho is not only hyper against abortion, they're also hyper against transgender people. So they wanted to make sure trans kids couldn't get any health care, couldn't get any, puberty blockers or bottom surgery or anything that would be considered transgender health care. They passed a law that said before any minor can receive any health care, they have to have parental permission. What they forgot is the administration of a rape kit, the testing of DNA evidence of the crime of rape by the police, is a medical procedure. So remember how you get raped and it's the first trimester and you have to report that rape to be able to get the abortion? So now, if it's your daddy who raped you, you have to report the incestuous rape to the police, get your daddy arrested. Then, after your daddy's arrested, you have to go to your incestuous daddy to get his permission to administer the rape kit that proves the rapist daddy's crime that then allows you to get the abortion. Do you think the rapist daddy is going to give permission for the rape kit to be administered? Doesn't sound very wise, does it? So basically, yeah, you want to molest your kids in the state of Idaho. That's the place to be, I guess. It's hell for pregnant teens in Idaho. Just absolute hell. So let me get back to that thing about the no health care, right? You can't give kids health care without their parents' permission. This story came out of the Washington Post, where there was a patient who was 36 weeks pregnant. So just about ready to give birth, right? She was having contractions. And so she goes into this emergency room in this small town where she's new to the area. Now, normally the doctor, hey, pregnant teen girl coming in here having contractions, let's get to the pelvic exam. But because of this law, she couldn't. The doctor could not operate on this girl, could not even give the pelvic exam because she was brought in by her grand aunt. Her great aunt, right? Her great aunt had brought her in. And the girl, by the way, oh, I forgot to mention, the girl's 13. 13-year-old girl, 36 weeks pregnant, having contractions. Doctor has to say, hold on. Is this your mom? Oh, no, it's your great aunt. So what happened next was 2 hours of the hospital trying to contact this 13-year-old girl's mom. The mom was homeless, living in a car. Couldn't find her. They did find the grandmother. The grandmother was the teen's legal guardian. They found the grandmother. She was in jail in Boise, incarcerated on drug charges. And remember, drug charges in Idaho can be weed. So for 2 hours, this 13-year-old girl, 36 weeks pregnant, going into labor, had to wait another 2 hours for them to track down mom or grandma in jail to get the permission to help her. These are the unintended consequences these people don't think about when they put these blanket bans on things. And it's not just the pregnant women who suffer in this state. All women's health care suffers. Since the abortion ban, women who have had severe life-threatening complications in their pregnancy are airlifted across the border to Oregon, Washington, or Montana for the health care that's banned in Idaho. Since the ban has taken effect, 51 of the state's 227 OBGYNs have left Idaho, and only two have come to replace them. And two entire hospital obstetrics programs have closed in Idaho. So you're a woman that needs a pap smear. You need a screening, a mammogram, all these things. And Idaho even has a law that forbids any taxpayer money from being spent on abortion education. And the law is so strict that teachers and professors, who, of course, get public money in their salaries, are restrained from discussing abortion. We can't talk about abortion in the high school biology health class. You can't talk about abortion in the college class. Now, you might be thinking, that's unconstitutional. There's no way. That's a free speech guarantee. They should have the doctors and teachers and professors all should have this free speech right. Even though abortion's banned, you can't ban people talking about it. Well, here's the catch. You're right. It would be deemed unconstitutional, although with this Roberts court, who knows? But the constitutionality hasn't been challenged because the Attorney General of Idaho promised not to enforce it. So the people who are going, the doctor or the teachers and such, who wanted to sue over this law, get a case before the courts to determine that it's unconstitutional. They were found to lack standing because if the government has promised not to bust them, then they can show no harm. Well, isn't that convenient? So who's going to be the first teacher, professor to step out and try to risk that to see whether or not the Attorney General is going to actually keep his promise? Because I can see them prosecuting and putting one of them folks in jail while the court cases figure out whether or not it was constitutional. That's exactly what they'd do. So boycott Idaho. Specifically, boycott Idaho potatoes. In fact, want to be safe, boycott all potatoes. Really, you can live without potatoes. You don't need french fries. You can do without potatoes. There's lots of other side dishes. But if you really like potatoes, they grow some great ones in Washington and Oregon and all sorts of other states. Don't pick up those bags of Idaho potatoes. Or in the boxes, they have the Idahoan mashed potatoes, the instant potatoes and stuff. Boycott them. And boycott McDonald's fries. They're from Simplot. Simplot's an Idaho company. When it comes to groceries, get your groceries somewhere other than Albertsons, Safeway, or Winco Foods. Albertsons was formed in Idaho. Albertsons store number one still operates in Boise, Idaho. They bought out Safeway, which was a California company originally, but they own Safeway now. And they own a whole lot of others. I didn't have enough room on the slide to put them all. And then Winco Foods, this one really bothered me because I actually like Winco Foods. They're an employee-owned company, but they're Idaho-based. Jackson's Food Stores, they're a convenience store kind of thing. You can find a different one. Boise Cascade, they make building materials and paper and such, paper products. You can boycott them. Micron Technologies, makers of chips and computers, boycott them. And finally, Melaleuca, the nutraceuticals, natural supplements people. Ban them as well. Boycott Idaho. Let's send a message to these red states. Let's hurt them in the pocketbook and show them that we are the economically superior states. All right. Today in the Radical Rant, who really won 2024? I don't care. Hello, kitty. Today, I thought we'd take a look at what I found to be the most fascinating look at the American electorate over the past 50 years. And when we get down to this, we have to understand that you and I are very politically astute people. We're online. We're following what's going on. We follow bills. We watch C-SPAN. We're the weirdos, right? Most people aren't that way. Most people are not into politics. And because of that, most people don't care. From most people's point of view, it's like, Democrats, Republicans, same sides, two sides of the same coin, two wings of the same bird. They're all for the rich. Despite the fact that I could spend a whole nother hour telling you the vast differences, at least what they should be. But most people don't see that. They just see it. Democrats hate Republicans. Republicans hate Democrats. They all talk shit about each other. They don't care. And getting people to care is the politician's and the party's job. And what I want to show you here are some numbers that show how Republicans do a better job of getting people to care. This is a chart I found from the University of Florida Election Lab. And what they did is they took data from the Federal Election Commission. They took all the votes. They calculated all the votes from every presidential election from 1976 all the way through 2024. But not just the votes for the Democrat, the Republican, and the Independent. They also took a look at how many possible voters were there that actually just didn't vote. Now, this doesn't include people that voted for fringe candidates. So the numbers aren't absolutely perfect, right? It's going to leave out your Jill Steins and Gary Johnsons, right? But it does focus on the major independents who gained more than 2 or 3 points, and then the Democrats and the Republicans. Now, the way this chart is laid out, and again, those of you listening on the podcast, I'll do what I can to make sure you understand, is we have a bar graph that shows who got the most votes that election. Was it the Democrat in blue? Was it the Republican in red? Or was it I didn't vote in yellow? I didn't vote in yellow. As you look at the chart, you can see that in every election but one, I didn't vote was a larger share of the electorate than either the Democrat or the Republican. And why should they vote? Again, they think there's no big difference. And the way Hakeem Jeffries and the rest of the Democrats are behaving now, that it's just politics as usual. Oh, they're just another president, but they're incompetent. Why would they care? Let's dig a little deeper. Let's start all the way back in 1976. It's interesting to note to me how Republicans are more popular in their second election, but Democrats are not. Now, let's break it down. We think of the 1980 and 1984 Reagan electoral landslide. You remember that? Those maps where the whole, every state is red but one, right? When he beat Carter, when he beat Mondale. But even then, even during what we call electoral landslides, almost half the people didn't bother to vote. 47%, 48%, 47%, 48%. Almost half the people don't even bother to vote. Now let's bring back the actual vote numbers, right? In 76, Jimmy Carter got 27% of the vote, while did not vote got 47%. The very next year, Ronald Reagan got 27% of the vote, and 48% didn't care. So again, the winner got about a quarter, and about half the people don't care. He got no more share of the vote in 1980 than Carter did in 76. But in his next term, look at that, Reagan shoots up to 31%. He gains 4 points. More people liked Reagan the second term around than the first term around. And then, after his term ends, his second term ends, he goes and passes the presidency off to George W. H.W. Bush, you know, Bush Sr. And looky there, he got about the same 28% of the vote. About the same 28% of the people who picked Reagan or Carter the first time. And again, 48% of the people just don't care. Now let's move up to the last quarter of the 20th century. Still, over half the people don't bother to vote. But the outlier is right there in 1992, Bill Clinton's first election. The man from hope. Don't stop thinking about tomorrow. He managed to only have 42% of the people who didn't care. We went up from 48% or down from 48% to 42% of people who didn't care. Somehow, this young guy, this new hope and change guy, don't stop thinking about tomorrow, got more people to care. But when you break down what he got, Bill Clinton only got 25% of the vote. George H.W. Bush got 22%, and Ross Perot came in with 11%. If Ross Perot hadn't run, George W. Bush might have been a two-term president. And then look at the next race, Bill Clinton gets the same 25%. What is it about the Democrat that after 4 years of the Democrat, he's the same lack of popularity, same 25%? Reagan gained 4 points in his second term. What happened? Well, it looks like 7% went back to I don't care. After Bill Clinton's first term, we got back to half the people not caring. How come the Democrats can't keep the interest, can't keep the focus of the voters? Let's move up to the 2000s. Of course, we got Al Gore's stolen election in 2000, where again, almost half the people picked I don't care, and just over half the Supreme Court picked Bush. And we break their numbers down again in 2000. They got about a quarter. 26% of the people picked George Bush, 26.2% picked Al Gore, and we all know that he got more votes, but he lost. But still, that 26% down there in the 27% that Reagan got on his first time through, right? But then the next year, the next election, 2004, George Bush W. increased his support from 26 to 31. Reagan gained 4 points in his second term. Bush gained 4 points, or 5 points, in his second term. Now, to be fair, there was a war going on. The war on terror. 9/11 had happened, right? But remember, the Democrats ran a certified war hero in that election, remember? And remember, Abu Ghraib and all that other kind of stuff was happening. Bad things, bad news was coming out of this. Democrats couldn't get more people to care. It is interesting to note that I don't care did drop to just 40%, the lowest it had been, even lower than the Bill Clinton election. Now, we move on to Barack Obama. For the first time in 2008, when Barack Obama won, less than 40% of the people didn't care. He is the first to get that below 40%. Well, you know, a young guy talking about hope and change and si se puede got people interested, got people energized. And Barack Obama was the first president in this survey to get a third of the electorate. Barack Obama's 33% beat Ronald Reagan's and George Bush's second term improvements. Remember, they went up from 27, 28 up to 31, right? Barack Obama got 33. I don't care was down all the way to 39%, and only 28% of the people picked John McCain. Then what happens the next election? Obama's down to 30%. 3 percentage points dropped off. He lost 3% back to I don't care, because Romney got the same 28% that McCain got. Republicans didn't get any more popular during Barack Obama's term. Barack Obama got less popular over his term. Why is that? Now, let's move up to 2016, where again, about the same percentage of people from the last election, 43% picked I don't care. And more people picked Hillary than picked Donald Trump, but Trump won the Electoral College, right? That's the way we play. But notice the number he got. Trump got 28%. The same 28% that Romney got in 2012, the same 28% that McCain got in 2008. The Republicans didn't get any more popular. But Democrats were unable to hold on to people caring. They went from Barack Obama's 33 down to 30, down to Hillary Clinton getting 29. Why can't Democrats keep the focus from one term to the next? And then, of course, we got 2020, Joe Biden. The only election since 1976 in which more people cared about one of the candidates than didn't care. He got 34.4%, where 34.3% didn't vote and 31.3% voted for Trump. 31.3. He rose from 28% to 31%. Even though Biden beat him, And it's also important to notice how the 34% being the low mark of I don't care, we should understand that I don't care isn't necessarily that people don't care. A lot of it's voter suppression in some states, right? There's voter suppression that goes on. But still, in 2020, I don't care was so low because we were on such a mad rush to have mail-in voting. We made it easier for people to vote. That needs to be top on the Democratic agenda. And then 2024, 32% of the people voted for Trump. Harris got 30%. So the Democrats dropped 4 points from Biden to Harris and put Harris down to about where Hillary Clinton was. Don't care rose to 38%. Joe Biden was in office from 2020 to 2024, 4 years, with over a third of the people supporting him, and could not make the case strongly enough to keep people from moving into the I don't care section. Lost 4 points with the oncoming freight train of a fascist dictatorship, could not keep the electorate's attention. Now, all of this got me to thinking about history. Because I look back to 1976 on this one, all the way back to Jimmy Carter, which is kind of as far back as my memory goes. I was 8 years old when Jimmy Carter was elected. He's kind of the first president I can remember. But it got me wondering, when I saw this picture, we showed this earlier in the show, of Trump and Biden in the Oval Office. And it got me wondering, who was the last Democratic president to follow a living Democratic president? Because I got to thinking about it, and I could not think of any picture like this one where the Democrat was on one side handing power off to the Democrat on the other side. Now, I do have in my memory the same sort of picture for the Republicans. I remember very well in 1988, I was 20 years old, when Ronald Reagan sat in one chair handing off the presidency to George H.W. Bush in the other chair. 12 straight years of Republican rule from 1980 to 1992. That's not happened in my lifetime for Democrats. So who was the last Democratic president to follow a living Democratic president? When was the last time, barring a death or an assassination, that a Democrat handed over a peaceful transfer of power to another Democrat? Let's go backwards through our Democratic presidents. Barack Obama, I'm sorry, 2020, Joe Biden, he didn't run again. 2008, Barack Obama, two terms, and then Clinton lost. 1992, Bill Clinton, two terms, and then Gore lost. 1976, Carter, well, he lost his reelection. 1968, LBJ, well, he didn't run again. And then Hubert Humphrey lost to Nixon. Kennedy, yeah, Kennedy could have passed it on to Johnson, but he wasn't alive at the time. He was assassinated. And the reason I make that distinction is because the assassination of Kennedy kind of puts the ball in Democrats' court, right? Because, you know, I mean, not only just the fact that you're transferring to the vice president, obviously, but in his next election in 64, LBJ won. Well, again, that's carrying over kind of a Kennedy, you know, was assassinated thing. So, and besides, even if we don't consider the assassination disqualifying, it's still only an 8-year period that from 1960 to 1968 with LBJ and Kennedy. Truman. Harry Truman was term limited in 1952, so he couldn't run again. And Adlai Stevenson run, and he lost. 1932. This one's important. Franklin Delano Roosevelt served four, or was elected to four terms. He was elected in 32, 36, 40, and 44. Won four elections in a row. But he died shortly into his fourth term in 1941, and then Truman took over. So again, we don't have a living Democrat to pass on to a living Democrat. However, we do have 20 years of unbroken Democratic rule, from FDR in 32 to Truman giving up in 52 to Ike. and think of all the things that were accomplished in those 20 years. Think of how much progress we made. Integrating the military, integrating schools, the New Deal, all of the work proposals, Social Security, all these things that happened because Democrats were able to chain together five straight terms. All right, well, there has to be one, a living Democrat passed off to a living Democrat. Let's see. I'll go farther back. 1912, Woodrow Wilson. He served two terms, but he had a stroke. And then the guy that ran after him, Cox, Spencer Cox was his name, I think. Could be wrong. He lost. So Woodrow Wilson doesn't count. Oh, we have to go back to the 1800s. All right. 1892, Grover Cleveland. He served his second term. He's like Trump, served two terms that weren't next to each other. So he was serving his second term and decided not to run again. William Jennings Bryan ran and he lost. Okay. 1884, Grover Cleveland's first term. Well, he lost his reelection. That's why he was non-consecutive. So he doesn't count. 1965, Andrew Johnson. After Lincoln's assassination, Andrew Johnson was president, and he wasn't renominated. He was hated. And some guy named Seymour lost the presidency. How far back do we got to go? 1852, Benjamin Franklin Pierce served one term and was followed in 1856 by James Buchanan. In other words, it has been 169 years since a living Democratic president made the transfer of power to the next Democratic president. But again, that's just 8 years total. Even though it was two back, they finally passed one on, that good for you. It's still only 8 years. Has there ever been a two-term Democratic president to pass on the power to another Democrat? Well, it wasn't James K. Polk, 1844. He pledged to serve only one term and did it. Just served one term. Andrew Jackson. We have to go to 1828. Andrew Jackson served two terms and was followed in 1836 by Martin Van Buren. In other words, it has been 189 years since a living two-term Democratic president made a transfer of power to the next Democratic president. Or in other words, since the Civil War, no living Democratic president has passed on the office to another Democratic president. And to me, it's these spans of administrations is where we make progress. We make some if you get a two-term president. You make some progress. But three terms or more is what it really takes to change the direction of this country. And when it comes to the Democrats, there is just one span since the Civil War where they could put more than two terms together. 1932 to 1952, when Roosevelt won those four elections. And boy, as soon as that happened, Republicans, when Ike got in power, immediately worked to craft the 22nd Amendment and limit the president to two terms. Yeah. See, because Republicans understand that you can't let the opponents have an advantage. Oh my gosh, a Democrat got in and rescued the economy from the Great Depression and put all these people to work and successfully fought the World War. We're never going to lose to this guy. They had to change the rules to make sure we couldn't put three of them together again. Republicans, though, from 1868 to 1884, 16 years of Republican rule. From 1896 to 1912, 16 years of Republican rule. From 1920 to 1932, 12 years of Republican rule. And from 1980 to 1992, 12 years of Republican rule. No wonder we're in the spot we're in today. And one last look at this data. I decided to map it out, starting back in 1860. Now, I put these red flags up to indicate one presidential term. And the red flags are moving to the right. And so if you stack together a bunch of Republican terms, you move farther to the right. And then the blue flags are the Democratic terms. If you stack a bunch of those together, you'll move farther to the left. Now, I know this isn't entirely accurate ideologically. Before 1960, the Democrats and Republicans were different on a lot of issues. And especially looking back to the Reconstruction era, the 1800s, they were almost virtually opposites. But just to look at this from a momentum sense, from a political who can string together the wins, it looks pretty sad for the Democrats, doesn't it? Well, that's all the time we have here for the Radical Rush Show, which is written, produced, directed and engineered, designed, researched, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, except for this main theme, which is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and other small clips presented under fair use. Send your comments, kudos, and complaints by email to RadicalRuss@gmail.com, at my Radical Russ YouTube channel, or to RadicalRuss.com on Blue Sky and nowhere else. Send your monetary appreciations via Venmo at Radical Russ, Cash App $RadRuss, and PayPal via my website at RadicalRuss.com. Subscribe to the Radical Rush Show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other, citizens.
You're growing, you're trying to roll it, you're smoking. Until you see, you're growing, you're trying to roll it, you're smoking. Until you see, you're growing, you're trying to roll it, you're smoking. And it comes down to...